The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Ireland is known around the world for being a land of saints and scholars, and much of this can be attributed to the work of Irish missionaries going back as far as St. Columbanus. What was once described as the golden era of the missionary movement in the 20th century, thousands of young Irish men and women joined Catholic missionaries all around the world. However, decades on, there's been a massive decline in the numbers of people signing up. So how many missionaries are leaving Ireland? How many are left in Ireland? Well, there's a new two-part series on RT1 called The Last Irish Missionaries, and former RTE presenter Brian Dobson and Dermot MacDonald explore the history of Ireland's missions in the contemporary world. And we're also joined, as well as by Brian Dobson, by Father Shay Cullen, an old pal of mine. We've talked many times over the years about his work with the Preda Foundation in the Philippines. Good morning and welcome both.
Good morning, Pat.
We'll start with you, Brian, first of all. Tell us about the genesis of this documentary, what it set out to do.
Well, what the documentary has set out to do is to explain really what was an extraordinary phenomena over several decades, in which, as you said, many thousands of young Irish men and women became missionary priests and nuns and really were found in almost every corner of the world. And why did this happen? What motivated them? The numbers have declined, obviously, for reasons that we all understand. But who will replace them? Who will do the work that they have done? So those are the kind of broad outlines that we were trying to address in the program.
Let's go for some answers, first of all. Why did people go? Was it a sense of adventure? Was it there was nothing in Ireland on offer, really?
I think there was certainly a sense of, and I'm speaking on the basis of those who I've spoken to, sure. And I think certainly many of them were attracted by the adventure of travelling at a time when people didn't really travel much beyond Ireland, to be able to go to the Far East or to Africa.
And there was a magazine that we got in our house as children, the Far East.
The Far East, yeah. Well, we visited the Columbans headquarters at Dalgan Park in Navan, and in fact looked through the old archives of the Far East magazine, and it painted this picture of a very exotic experience for those who...
Well, we can talk to the man himself. Shay, why did you go?
Why did I go? Yeah, I think the sense of adventure, of getting out of Ireland, it wasn't very much for us here.
That's all right. We can talk our way through it.
We couldn't get to university, you know. So what's the future work in England, you know? And Mark Alpine's Fusiliers were the... Yeah. The only jobs for us, so an adventure, but also a sense of trying to do something worthwhile.
Now, you had to go where you were sent, I presume. You didn't
volunteer
for the
days,
Philippines.
No, it was all by chance, but we got this opportunity. But, you know, they say it's not this last of the... I don't believe this thing, last of the missionaries. It's a misnomer. I think there's lots of people on mission doing good work every day, everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, in the documentary, you make the point that it's about commitment.
Yes, it is.
That and whether you don't call it a mission anymore, for many people, it's a commitment to do something.
It's a commitment to do. And there's, thousands of Irish people as well are out now on doing humanitarian work, they call it, not missionary work. And you could say my work is humanitarian work as well, if you know what I mean. But the motivation is the main thing here. And, you know, what they're working in many missions abroad for human rights and in the camps in Gaza and in...
What distinguishes this Irish missionary story, the religious, is that it was a lifelong, for many of them, a lifelong commitment. They're still in the field. You know, Father Shay is still out in the Philippines, still doing the work that he began 50 years ago. And we came across very many of those stories. One Irish nun, Sister Aura Tracy, who's running a school in South Sudan, says, I've identified the tree under which I'm going to be buried. I mean, that is her commitment. And that to me is a very particular vocational calling that they're answering.
Yeah, and people didn't get home maybe once every 7 years because travel then was not like travel is now.
No, I mean, in some cases, they expected never to be home again. If you go back into the previous century, the Loreto nuns went out to India to set up schools there. They didn't even have a passport because they never expected...
There's a point and moment when a priest is talking about heading off and his mother learning to drive so she could drop him to the airport. Yeah. And then two more brothers followed.
That's right, yeah. Father Cyril, who's again a Columban, a colleague of Shay's, and you know, who spoke about. I asked him, did he have second thoughts when he made that journey? No, because his motivation was interesting. He came from Fermoy, that was his home place in County Cork, and he said he had a calling. He felt a vocation. He looked at the priesthood in his own diocese, and he realised there are 4,000 people in Fermoy and four priests. And in the Philippines, there were 20,000 people and one priest. Now, he said, where could I be of more use?
Yeah. One of the messages I got from the documentaries, it's two of them, parts one and two, is that many people went off with this kind of conversion of other people in mind, but it transformed into, if you like, doing the humanitarian work in those places. Is that a fair assessment of the transformation for many so-called missionaries?
Yeah, well, when we had this development of liberation theology, it was now focused on human rights, on freeing the people from oppression, from slavery. Like at Preda, we have rescuing people from sex slavery and all of that. So we're focusing on service to people in greatest need rather than massing and church going. That structure was all built up over the years. Mm-hmm. But in the last 15, 20 years, more and more of working for human rights, mm-hmm. human dignity, opposing, you know, like the gospel message, you know, we had to, I mean, you have Jesus of Nazareth taking on the authorities and calling them whited sepulchres and getting himself executed. Now
the extraordinary thing is so many people put themselves in harm's way. I mean, whether it was in Biafra where you had bombing going on and you had nuns and priests putting themselves in harm's way, and they did it unflinchingly.
Mm. And I think because at the heart they had a mission, and they were going to execute that mission. And you mentioned Biafra and the civil war, the war in Nigeria in the early 70s. The priests and nuns who were there were given the opportunity to get out. And one of them we speak to, Father Pascal Kearney, who's now in Rathlin Island in County Antrim, said he couldn't leave because he'd never be able to live with himself if he abandoned the people in their greatest hour of need as this war was getting underway.
Now, Shay, you came to Promise, I suppose, on foot of another of your colleagues, Father Niall O'Brien, and the famous interviews with Charlie Bird that happened, because he was locked up and charged with, was it murder he was charged with?
Yeah, himself and Brian Gore, who just died on Easter Sunday. We were good buddies and friends in Negros Island, and they were opposing the oppression of the farmers. We work with indigenous farmers, in the mango farmers at this time, and they were defending them and their land, and they were accused by the authorities and the mayor of murder, you know, to silence them, to stop their work for human rights and in supporting the exploited farmers.
And it's fair to say that the kind of pressure that was brought to bear brought about his release. I mean, that was...
Well, it was. And a big campaign here in Ireland. I mean, the Irish stood up for their dignity and the rights of these people.
Now, they targeted you as well because of your work. I mean, your work in trying to rehabilitate those children who were the subject of sexual abuse and the sex trade generally. And they tried to tar you.
Well, they went after me because we were having successful legal actions against pedophiles and human traffickers. And they would countercharge, you know, and, I mean, 35 libel cases against me. I won every one of them. You know, we learned the law. Now we're still prosecuting abusers. We had 27 convictions last year. And now this year we're up to 12 convictions of these abusers.
Now, much of this started with a U.S. naval base in the Philippines, which departed, and now they are returning.
Yes. In those days, we started a campaign by chance close out the military bases and convert them to economic. And it was a big success. I mean, you might say it's a strange mission, but it was a mission. There was actually to free the many thousands of women and children who were in the sex industry. They were in debt bondage. And the whole idea was, how can you save these people in these sex bars all over the place, serving U.S. servicemen at Subic Bay? So I decided that the only way was to get rid of the military base. And that succeeded.
And that's what you did.
Yeah. I did 8 years of campaigning nonstop. And eventually the Senate, the Philippine Senate, voted against a new military. But now they're coming back, as you said. Mm-hmm. And now we have a change whereby they are not allowed by constitution to be in the Philippines, but they are situated inside Philippine military bases. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at the possibility of war over Taiwan.
Yeah. And that's why America's back in there for proximity to Taiwan. Mm-hmm. I should mention Forest Feast. Mango Fair Trade, and that's to benefit your organization.
This is, this is actually prevention, because in the remote villages, children are trafficked, you know, and because of poverty, hunger, they're made lured to work in hotels, but in fact, they end up in sex bars. And we're working in the villages. We have 630 farmers organized in growing mangoes. We process them into dried mangoes and mango puri. And the communities develop and they grow. And so this idea of being imported here by a group in Portadown called Kestrel Imports, and they're our partner, and they have this brand. And so that's in all the supermarkets. So
yeah, it's called Forest Feast, so it's just to make sure
Forest
that people...
Feast. It's a great brand. Yeah. And Prade is on the...
Yeah, it mentions Prade, Prade Fair Trade Mango.
There you go.
Finally, Brian, your observations having voyaged far and wide in the course of making these documentaries.
Well, I'm just so impressed by the commitment of so many of those that we met, their energy, their determination to confront the injustices that they find, their effectiveness in combating those injustices, and just speaking out on behalf of those who don't have a voice themselves or whose voices are silent. I mean, Shea exemplifies it. He's one of a number of stories in the documentaries over the next 2 weeks, and I think particularly an Irish audience will be fascinated by the story that we tell.
And the stat, no Irish missionaries have left here for the developing world in the 21st century.
That's true, yes. There are some still being recruited in the countries in which some of the orders operate. And in fact, some of those have come back to Ireland and have, if you like, taken their mission back to
trying to get
country.
Us all back on the straight and narrow. Brian Dobson, presenter of the documentaries with Dervin MacDonald, and Father Shea Cullen, the founder of Prada. Thank you both very much for joining.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.